In this week, on the 17th of August 2002, nearly 2,500 fans basked in the sun as the new Dons kicked off the Combined Counties League campaign with a 2-1 win at Sandhurst Town. After all the hard work from everyone to overcome the nightmare of May 28th, I felt a few tears in my eyes when we kicked off today, Chairman Chris Stewart said. This was our team out there today, playing for us and playing for points. It was a great day out, and I hope there are many more to come. There were many more to come. There are many more to come. We're still here. We're still fan-owned. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. Traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Welcome, welcome, dear listener, to the Same Old Wombles podcast, the only pro fan-owned Wimbledon podcast out there. And today I'm delighted to be joined by the regular team. Hello to Dr. Adam Proctor. Hello, Adam. How are you doing? Are you enjoying the summer holidays?
No, it's too flipping hot. I've never sweated so much in my life.
And you're already really thin. So I'm worried that you could sweat away, to be honest with you.
If I'm not careful, yeah.
welcome to Mon Frère, the saviour of football, Niall Cooper. Hi, Niall. How you doing?
All right, man. I'm busy being saving it, so I'll try to be best today. Haven't quite done it, but maybe next week.
Yeah, that's all right. But you've been talking to people, haven't you? You've been talking to important people.
I've been talking to the Rio Ferdinand Foundation today, which is quite nice.
There you are. You see, that's another step in the way to saving football. And of course, the man himself, the legend, the voice of the opposition podcast, it is Tall Mark Lewis. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good evening, everybody. I can't believe even on my birthday, you didn't even introduce like that. But I guess these supercars have stuck, haven't they? No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm officially 11 today. I definitely remember the Sandhurst game. Everyone's got the Sandhurst story. I could tell mine now or I can tell it later, but we had a good Sandhurst story.
Oh, Mark, as it's your birthday, and we've sent our birthday wishes to you, my friend, and you're looking younger every day. So, can I say what was your memory of Sandhurst?
Yeah, you're very kind, but button me up because you obviously want something later. And the weirdest thing about Sandhurst, and I don't quite know why, and I'm not quite sure. Like all the other Wimbledon fans, we had any idea what we had to expect when we got there. But my wife decided that the ideal thing to do on my birthday, 32? Yeah. So not a very significant birthday, was to go to the game by limo.
Of course.
She ordered a limo. There were only four of us.
Oh, I remember you saying yes.
She ordered a limo for myself, my wife, and our friend Mary and Pete Jones. It's where Mary started a ferry. And little Molly Peter, her husband, to take us from downtown Worcester Park to across the Sandhurst to the hay bales. Bless you, Matt. And that was quite surreal when we arrived and saw the hay bales, and even more surreal that the limo just sort of parked up somewhere nearby, and God knows what the neighbours thought. The neighbours must have thought crazy things about 2,500 Wimbledon fans coming anyway, let alone one of them, four of them turning up in a limo.
That is fantastic. I think my unfortunate thing on that day is I wasn't there. I have no idea why I wasn't there. That was what it was. I can only assume that there must have been some holiday or shenanigans involved. But you weren't there either, were you, Niall?
No, I wasn't there. But I was at the Sutton game, right? And I was at the Chipstead game.
Okay, Niall, we're talking Sandhurst. You can't back out of it like me. You've got to accept it. You've got to accept that we weren't there. Adam, were you there?
I have no idea where I was.
No, of course he does not. He'll claim it.
Part-time friends, honestly.
Yeah, I know.
I went to all the pre-seasons.
I must have been there.
Where else we play? I can't remember all the other teams we played. I went to a load of those. Enfield and Bromley. I was there when Trigger scored the first goal.
I was there when Trigger scored the first goal as well, actually. Yeah.
I like it, Adam. You're saying you must have been there. Just take it, mate, because no one could disprove it. Anyhow,
I was trying to look at photos to see if I had a photo, because that's how I prove whether I've been somewhere. After that, it became the application swarm. So then I can be like, oh yeah, I've been here before.
Anyhow, chaps, the 2026-27 season has well and truly begun. It started, let's remember, with a League Cup victory. Let's remember that. And I think after that occasion, we were, you know, we said it would be a long season. We said it would be difficult. But I think, and I have to confess, I'm holding my hands up with this. I think we also said Bishop seems like he's going to be our man to be in goal. And then I saw highlights of the match. I don't think any of us are there. And yet again, the only one who was there, Mr. Tall Mark Lewis. Hey, mate, how was it?
I'll be upfront about it to start with. I thought we'd lose. I think most of us thought we'd lose.
Yeah.
And obviously, playing against the team, starting the season against the team that you finished the season against, when they beat you 4-0 end of last season, isn't great. But Huddersfield, I'm not going to make excuses, but in general terms, Huddersfield have the setup, players and the strength of depth of squad, have them there or thereabouts with the other teams for playoff contention in League One. That being said, when you play a team like that, or any team actually, but when you play a team like that, what you don't do is absolve yourself of any defensive responsibility and then leave a winger on his debut one-on-one with the keeper about 3.5 minutes into the game. Even if you do that, you expect your keeper, even if the shot is pretty hard, to make a stab at saving it. We were directly behind the goal that we were defending first half. You could see the shot was straight at him. It was hard and it went straight through his hands, which you wouldn't expect anyone to do at any football league level. So that wasn't a great start. And there's some recriminations between goalkeeper and defenders, even though you could see Bishop clearly knew it was his fault straight away. But to be fair, I think both Nelson and Tilly had ample opportunity to clear the ball and didn't. But frankly, we were just on the back foot from the start and defending poorly and looking very shell-shocked from the start, not even after we'd let in the goal after 3.5 minutes. So no goalkeeper would have had much of a chance, but Bishop didn't cover himself in glory at all, unfortunately. And I think, as is always the way, as we'll come on to with other topics later on, if people have a particular opinion, and there are enough people already that have an opinion that Bishop wasn't the right answer, then that's just going to give them more fuel to their fire.
Yeah. I mean, I just have to say, it's so boring and predictable that every time we suffer a defeat, particularly, you know, like one like this, you know, where it's 2 or 3 goals, then everyone jumps on. And it suddenly becomes this sort of like we would have won that game if we weren't fan owned. But it's just really, really predictable. It's really tiring. And you know, we're aware that behind the scenes things are happening. No one's got any patience. And I think that my understanding is that we're going to know more in September. We'll obviously know more about who we've got in and out of the squad in September, and just briefly talk about that before we come back to Huddersfield. We noticed today that Kai Jennings has gone on loan to Crawley for the rest of the season. Apparently he was offered a deal extension, which he hasn't signed. So the chances are we won't see Kai Jennings playing back for AFC Wimbledon.
Can I stop and ask everyone's opinion just about that on its own?
First? Yeah, sure, Sure. I mean, I think, because I actually think that probably a few of us would have thought he'd be our breakthrough player this year. So,
where I'm at with this is I have an inkling that Craig Cope and JJ are doing a quite a big background cull of players that aren't either keen to play for us or haven't got the right attitude to play for us. And I think what he's doing is he's culling loads. This is me being optimistic and thinking he must have ideas of other people that he wants to bring in. And what he's doing is shifting people that have got either the wrong attitude or, you know, just aren't going to cut it. And I think Kai Jennings, the subtlety of what was, or the lack of subtlety that was put in that note, basically says Kai Jennings was telling Everton to fuck off. And JJ has told Kai Jennings, so if you're going to say that, then fuck off, is basically where, that's why I read between the lines.
Well, I think you're being harsh. I think probably Kai was looking and thinking how, I mean, because we've talked about this many, many times, that I think we've got, what, eight or nine midfielders. And where's his chance going to be? How's he going to get in that squad? So I think that's the thing. So he's looking at it, he's going, how's he going to get in there? And his best chance is really to move on. And you know, he was a success at Sutton, and he's, you know, he might be a success at Crawley. If you could only see Rock Lewis's face. You're disagreeing with me, my friend.
I am, but I'll let Adam over say first.
Well, I'd probably stick with what Niall said. I think he was obviously offered some extensions, didn't think they were good enough deals, thinks he can do better elsewhere. So he's like, you know, I'm off. So, yeah, I don't know where he would have fitted in the team, really, to be honest. We thought he was going to be something interesting, but I have not seen enough of him to really know that was the case. But, yeah, I think if we're offering extensions to players and they don't want to take it, it probably means they think they can get a better deal somewhere else. And so that's, what I guess, what's happened. And maybe we can sell him. If we can sell him before he's out of contract, that would be great. So, you know, that's probably the thing I'm interested in. We need to sell some of these people to get money in the door.
I think a lot of these situations with Jennings does tie into a lot of situations with the squad and overall who wants to play, who doesn't want to play. Jackson's interviews after the game are usually very bland and very boring and doesn't really get asked particularly searching questions. However, after the game on Saturday, he said almost word for word, if the players aren't good enough, they won't play. Now, I would agree with him because on the terraces, on the safe standing that we had at Huddersfield, that was very much the expression that was being being outlined by the fans in rather more, what's the word, rudimentary language. And actually, the Lewis family, it was all four of us were there, my wife, my daughter, my son as well. And we're usually quite succinct after games. It's like no one wants to hear Dad's opinion about the game again, so we will just move on to another topic. They were all very vociferous. And the vociferous nature of what we were saying was actually, and then you could list a number of players, didn't look like they wanted to play for our football team on that day. Now, Obviously, we don't know what's going on in training. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes and so on and so forth. Jennings was at Huddersfield, apparently. He was they always have a spare player. He's not on the bench, but if anyone goes uninjured in warm up, whatever, they'll be on the bench and they'll be involved. So he was there for that. Now, yes, there are lots of other players in midfield. Few of them that played either on the, from the bench or from the start covered themselves in any glory. One of them did. One of them that did was the lad Harrison from Chelsea. I think he's already done more than Brady Hughes did in the whole of his time with us. So hopefully we can banish that Brady Hughes ghost in terms of Chelsea loanees. But maybe Jennings, or more importantly, Jennings' agent, because obviously even an 18-year-old player who's never played consistent regular first team football professionally for anyone, let's be honest about this, let alone AFC Wimbledon in the Football League, will think that they are better than they are. Jennings had a good spell at Sutton. However, he also, as we saw a couple of games, including the game Sutton played in the FA Cup last year that was on TV, made some real howlers. So, yeah, we wanted him to break through this season. and he would have had opportunities. In a squad like Wimbledon's, of course he would have had opportunities. Even if we start the season with 10, 12 midfield players, we know that by the end of it, we may well have been down to the only four still standing, which Jennings quite possibly could have been one. He probably would have played from in the game tomorrow night. We're recording on Monday the 17th. We've got a game in the Pointless Trophy on Tuesday the 18th. He obviously thinks he can play. I actually spoke to a club official because I was at the ground today briefly getting some stuff in the shop. And I said, you know, are we wheeling and dealing to get money in because we need money in? I had no idea about the signing. We'll talk about it in a minute. And the official said, well, no, as far as I know, he just thinks he can, or his agent thinks he can get first-team football and should be playing first-team football right now. But genuinely, would any of us, despite our situation, despite losing 3-0, would any of us put Akai Jennings to start in front of a Jake Reeves or a Marcus Hippolyte or an Alistair Smith or even possibly your young lad Harrison from Chelsea? I wouldn't, and I'm not a coach, but I wouldn't personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's that's really tricky, and I'm just looking now, so, and we'll come to Reeves in a minute as well. It's interesting you mention him. But, you know, it looks like now we're down to, I think I'm missing someone. So you can all shout at me when I've forgotten the name of the person I'm missing in midfield. I'm talking about centre midfielders, not wing-backs. So McCoy, Splatt, Maycock, Smith, Hippolyte, Nelson, Harrison. Is there anyone else I'm missing? And I'm taking Jennings and, we'll talk about it in a second, Reeves out of that. I had a feeling we had nine, but I've got eight on my list here.
McCoy, Splatt, Jennings. Sorry. McCoy, Splatt, Maycock, Hippolyte.
Yep.
Harrison.
Yep.
Smith.
Smith. Yep. Nelson.
Nelson. No, you're not missing anyone. Because the seventh and the eighth would be Jennings and Reeves.
Yeah. I just had a feeling we had nine. So when people
nine was in King because we didn't know what position he's playing.
Yeah. So Jennings has gone on loan. Now, the other interesting thing after the match that was revealed was that Reeves also wants first-team football, so he's looking somewhere else. And Nkeng, the saga continues. So we're still not sure what the situation with that is. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, if we've got down to six centre midfielders, then that feels comfortable to me. And I'm kind of excited to see McCoy Splatt because I'm hearing he played well in pre-season. Other people have talked well about him. So I'm interested to see how well he might do.
And you'd imagine McCoy, Splatt and Harrison, yeah, and another, possibly Nelson, will play. Yeah.
McCoy Splatt, why is he not playing?
Because he was injured all of last season.
Yeah.
And this season he's now back in the squad. Are you going to play someone who has, again, probably got less than 90 minutes worth of league experience ahead of a Maycock or a Hippolyte or a Reeves or a Smith?
Or not a Reeves.
I'm just saying. The other
We're going slightly with that. I mean, it's fair enough, Mark. But, like, we were dreadful on Saturday.
Yes, we were. Yes, we were. But that wasn't down to, you know, what specific midfield players we had. And we talked about already the idea of playing only 3-5-2 and not really being flexible, which the manager apparently is quite capable of doing different things, but didn't do any of those different things on Saturday. He just played 3-5-2 and brought some subs on and carried on playing 3-5-2. So that makes it quite predictable to play against. But which midfield players do you use then, you know? Actually, Harrison, when he came on, even though we were an absolute shit show from 1 to 11, Harrison, when he came on at 2-0 down, looked like he had an understanding of being a professional footballer, tried to make some tackles, played with his head up, played forwards, and actually moved the ball quickly from left to right. That seems like a simple thing that you would expect everybody to do, but every other person in a Wimbledon shirt beforehand had not done that. So I would expect him to have a chance, certainly in the game Tuesday night, and if that goes appropriately and positively, then to start on Saturday. I think actually maybe, because Harrison does genuinely look like a proper holding midfield player who can move the ball around, and not in any way comparing him to an Elliot Anderson, but in that respect, an Elliot Anderson as opposed to a Steve Galliers or Jake Reeves, who's a bit of a rottweiler in midfield. So if you actually played Smith and Harrison, because Harrison's 6 foot plus, then you're starting to get a little bit of opportunity in midfield to physically challenge for things, win knockdowns and so on. Because Nelson looked very nice on the ball, but he wasn't winning anything and he wasn't physical enough in any challenges. And that is really where Huddersfield were just front foot against us, and before we knew it, we were 2-0 down.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, but here's interesting, because I look back over the 3-0 game up at Huddersfield and the game on Saturday where we lost 3-0. The only changes to the team, so in 25 we had Lewis and Sue, Reeves and Orsi on the pitch to start with, and you replace those four with the likes. So for Lewis, see Sweeney. For Antwi, see Tilly. For Reeves, see Nelson. For Orsi, see Sasu. So, you know, I don't know which would be a stronger starting lineup, to be honest with you. Obviously, the 3-3 team was stronger. I mean, I'm assuming, though, I know nothing about Huddersfield, and it feels to me like they've strengthened a lot over the summer, and they're really pushing to go up. But also the other interesting thing was in terms of subs. So you'd have thought in the three on Saturday when we're losing, there would be more idea about, you know, putting on forward-looking players. But the subs we made in the 3-0 draw were Maycock, Hutchinson, Harbottle, Bugle and Sass. Those were the five subs we made. On Saturday, the subs we made were, again, Maycock. So Maycock for Maycock. Then we took off Hutchinson, see Harrison. We took off Harbottle, see Sessignon. We took off Bugle, see Stockley. We took off Sass, see Hackford. So it's exactly the same sort of substitutions we made in the 3-0 game as we did on Saturday when we lost 3-0. I mean, they might have played in different, slightly different positions, but it's exactly the same sort of changes, which I think is kind of weird. But you know, and I know that when Sessignon came on, I'm not sure, Mark, you can tell me, where did he play? Because both Tilly and Seddon were still on the pitch when he came on.
I'm not sure. I've seen James Tilly and Steve Seddon have worse games for Wimbledon ever than I did on Saturday. And I don't want to pick players out, but just being, you know, practical and about it, really. So Sessignon came on, and despite the fact that Tilly had been second to everything, really, as a right wing back, Sessignon, who I think is quite fitted, came on and played left wing back. Because he took Sweeney off again. And again, how long was the list? We said after the Newport game that we there were more questions than answers, and there were even more questions after the Huddersfield defeat. Not least Sweeney, so far as I'm aware, hasn't completed 90 minutes. And neither Sweeney or Johnson cover themselves in glory at all. And obviously Johnson is captain now, but on the basis of that, neither Johnson nor Sweeney should be in the team because neither of them look fit enough and sharp enough. But we've literally got nobody else to play centre back. But they took off Sweeney, and therefore they had to bring Seddon inside, and therefore someone has to play left wing back, which was Sessignon. I would have switched it the other way around, as far as I'm aware, on the basis he tried to come inside every single time, like he did last week, till he clearly likes it on his left, play him on the left then. Play Sessignon on his right foot on the right. I mean, yeah, it's wonderful if you're PSG and you can play opposite sides in terms of wingers, right footed on the left and right, left footed on the right. But we're not PSG. We're trying to be a competitive League One team. So put square pegs in square holes. Again.
Yeah. And, you know, so it's going to be a very difficult season, and we still need more players. But like we say, at the moment, Jennings has gone. Our thoughts. Let's take a minute to look at Reeves, because he's clearly looking for somewhere else. Am I right? My understanding is that he's based out West Country Way, so he could end up And I think Swindon, there was some rumours that it might be Swindon or...
Yeah, I spoke to him a couple of years ago after he re-signed for us. And I asked him about, at that point, he was with Steve Nicholson, he was first choice. They'd just been promoted back from League Two into League One. And we managed to sign him. And I thought, that's interesting. And I basically said, how on earth have you managed to do that? And in simple terms, he said, they offered me a one-year deal plus a one-year extension. Wimbledon offered me a 2 years plus 1 year. So from that perspective, he was comfortable about doing that and signing with us with more security. He also said that his wife is from the kind of Wiltshire area and they'd made a decision, they've got a young family, to settle in that area. So he and Boogle used to car share in together, and because Boogle is also from that area as well. I think Matt Stevens joined them because Matt Stevens is kind of Reading-friendly kind of way. That in itself, from Reeves' perspective, means if he's not getting regular football at Wimbledon, he may have to drop into League Two. Who's looking at him? Well, again, people have jumped on the Swindon websites and the Swindon local press, and they say that they're talking to a player with extensive football league experience in midfield. Well, you don't need to be visited to work out that could apply to Reeves. May not be Reeves, but this is Holloway, and Holloway tends to get his own way when it comes to trying to keep people's careers going. Obviously, he's got Ollie Palmer there. It's like Hagrid from Potter nowadays in terms of the league. But I guess, obviously, Reeves would know Palmer, would have played with Palmer, so that may be an option for him. And actually, I think I might have said this before the end of last season, if Reeves does go and would go on a permanent transfer rather than a loan at this point, then I would say, thank you very much. You've genuinely been an absolute star for Wimbledon on three different occasions, three different time periods. And he was captain, obviously, of the team that got back. He's the only player we've had, obviously, that was in both those squads for both the playoff-winning things. And in that respect, you know, legends are a loose term that gets thrown around in football quite a lot, but he is one of those players that genuinely would actually go into that ilk. Rather than him being in the squad for the rest of the season, playing 10, 15 games or so, if they obviously think that the likes of McCoy Splatt and Nelson and Harrison, all of whom are at least 10, if not 15 years younger than Reeves, let's be fair about this, then if they think they're better options, then fair enough to that. The only question I would have is, who are your senior voices in the dressing room now? Because Reeves, certainly as club captain, was one of those.
Yeah. I mean, I think we look back on it. I think it's time is a great thing. And we'll look back and realise that Reeves should be in that category of like a club legend. I mean, I think one of the introductions to him was that amazing goal he scored against York, which was just a phenomenal. And then I think he was the one who against Accrington in the playoff semi-final sort of like took on the team and shot the ball, which then Lyle Taylor popped in. So he will truly be remembered.
Fouled the player, so that Lyle.
I know they fouled the player. Yeah, if you look back on it, look back on that Accrington game. It's sort of like
I'm smiling very, very nicely about that game. I wonder if Matt's going to mention that maybe he held him down. Yeah. Of course, he didn't, Mark. What you both like, Mark and Matt? It was not. It was a.
It was six of one, half a dozen of another.
It's more like six of one and none of the other, or whatever. But like, you know, it was one of those marginal decisions that, you know, a referee obviously in the speed of football, you just, you know, you don't quite catch and whatever. Yep.
But go and look back at these. If people are, you know, have come recently to have a look back at some of Reeves' moments, because he has been an incredible servant for this club. And if he goes to extend his career, I think we just wish him all the best. And I mean, you're right, Mark.
On this, I mean, the reality is that, you know, all club legends go at some point,
yes, right?
Because it's just the age thing. And Reeves, when we look back on it, is a club legend. But I think also his time is up. And if we're able to get even a token fee or wherever he leaves, then I think that's probably fine. I think he goes with our blessing.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. You know, getting money for Reeves, getting money for Nkang, both clears stuff from the wages, because obviously Reeves are probably on something a bit higher, considering he was captain. You know, it's creating space that we need, isn't it? It's quite clear from Saturday that we are short in a number of places, and that we have a team that, in my opinion, is very, very low on confidence. Because that team, when it was full of confidence and flying at the start of Leeds last season, is not that much different to what we had then, you know? Oh, I mean, like,
Hardly any difference.
You're just talking about a team with no confidence. I mean, like Mark was saying, you know, we had Sutton and Tilly, who were, like, pretty nondescript. It's just, honestly, I am quite thankful that we
were a lot worse than nondescript.
All right. Okay, sorry. It was awful. So I was quite glad I wasn't with you, Mark, and actually me and Matt were in a pub trying our best not to pay any attention to it.
Yeah, we had a great time in the sun. It was brilliant. But it's you know, it's really difficult. And I'm right now, I'm kind of a slightly puzzled about our transfer policy, because you're right, Mark, we need some senior players, people who are going to stable us. But, you know, there's senior players and there's players that you think are, you know, sort of like winding down a little bit. So it's great to get Stockley in, but I think he's 32. I think Sweeney's the same sort of age. And we've just noticed, as we've joined the podcast, the club must know that we're about to do the podcast on a Monday evening. So they've given us another right back, Andy Yidam, who has spent the last 8 seasons with Reading. So I'm assuming that he must be some sort of a legend up that neck of the woods. He's joined the club on a 6-month, not even that, until January 27. So, but I understand he's been training with us for a while. I'm not entirely sure what to make of it, but, you know, he's 34 and he's, you know, he's only just left Reading.
Do you want to hear the quote that has come through into the WhatsApp group that Adam and I are both part of, which is a group of women and fans, from my Reading supporting friend, not me, this is somebody else, quote unquote, Reading, very honest player, been at Reading for a long period, as you say, Matt, and was club captain for a while. Had a number of injuries over the last few years, which have taken its toll on his pace. He does like to get forward and overlap with the forwards. Was a fan's favourite. Make of that what you will, but that sounds all right. And
he likes to overlap on the flanks,
which is what you need if you're playing right wing or right wing back. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
What it says to me is that he's definitely seeing Sessegnon as his second choice left wing back, which is frustrating for me because I think on the right he'd be absolutely fine. But you're looking at Yedom's record. He played 2-4-5 seasons straight for Reading in the Championship. And he played, this is from 2018 onwards, 2018-19. Played 45 games, 24 games, 21 games, 38 games, 41 games. They were relegated into League One. Last 3 years, they've been in League One. He played 32 games, 14 games. And last year, he played 29 games. So, yes, they released him, but he isn't, by the sound of it, a complete sick note. They obviously think that they're good enough, and they've obviously got the resource to have someone like Marriott and Charlie Savage, for example, under their books. And they're trying to poach some players, I think, from Oxford, who are under a transfer embargo right now. But I'd say, in terms of experience, we were talking about earlier on, as a short-term deal, that sounds sensible, to be honest. If you are getting rid of, not getting rid of, if we are selling in King for different reasons, which we can talk about later, then now you've got Sessegnon and Yedom as new options, as very experienced options, alongside Tilly and alongside Seddon. And loads of us love Tilly and Seddon, but frankly, on Saturday's performance, they, and in fact, I don't think anybody, possibly with the exception of Sessegnon when he came on as sub, and Stockley when he came on as sub, could complain if they weren't in the starting lineup for the Reading game on Saturday.
You said Harrison as well.
Yeah, and Harrison. Yeah, and again, I suspect all three of those I just mentioned will be playing midweek tomorrow night. And if they come through that well, then they'll be, as they say, showing up, making themselves available for selection. And we have to freshen it up.
So, I mean, so What do we do? What do we do, Chas? Because it is a thing. Why is it that we can do? You know, I mean, I get it. We were coming in. We came off the back of a really poor run. We had that lucky escape victory at Wigan, but aside from that, we were coming on a really, really poor run. But part of that, we thought, was because we had players missing. Certainly, Tilly was out for a period of time. I think there were others out as well. I mean, like most of our defence. So something has carried on. I mean, how do we change this around? Because he's going to stick to 3-5-2. I can't see how he wants to change that. How we change that.
A bit of this, Matt, might be why he's been some experienced heads, because when, you know, I remember being on the board when we went on that 28 game run without wins.
And so it's your fault.
Well, you know, everybody blamed me at the time. It wasn't nothing to do with me, but they all blamed me at the time. During that period, we had a load of young players that lost confidence. And basically, they were like, you know, you could sense it in the ground. As soon as we went 1-0 up, we'd assumed that they were going to score. So we lost 38 points, what it was, from being in front. And, you know, the confidence had gone. And I think where we're at with the moment is on the back of a very poor end of the season, confidence has gone in the team. And what you kind of need is some experienced heads who have been through the meal, both good and bad, to kind of cope with it. So your hope would be that the Stockleys and the Yiddens coming in, who've got that little bit of like, well, I've been here and I know how to get myself out of it, element to them that might be helpful. Because, you know, I don't know how often Seddon and Tilly have been on this sort of like, we're shit bit, you know, and all that element, or whether, you know, Oggs and Johnson are the same. You know, they're definitely the people I thought on, and I didn't go to Huddersfield, but definitely the people I thought on Newport was at midfield, looked like they had no confidence. You know, and Smith and Hippolyte are not bad players, but there was no confidence there at all. And it's like, you know, clearly we need to change that. We need a little boost. So I would give you a mark. I think Harrison, though a young player.
He's coming from a different angle. I mean, we need to freshen things up. I guess the other thing is, and I was looking at the our good friends at Womble World. They suggest that perhaps we're over indexed on Taurus. I just think we've got too many Taurians in the team, and I don't think there's any Aries, if I remember rightly. So you know, we've only got a Scorpio in there. So maybe we need to sort of like look at the zodiac alignment of our squad, you know, as a potential thing. But if you get a chance, do check out. We'll put the link in our little message. But have a check out the Womble World Zodiac Scouting, which is theirs, you know, they've trademarked it, and I think it tells a lot about our squad, to be honest with you.
I'm checking Andy Yiddum as we speak. I don't know which actual month is a Taurus, but you know, 2nd of December 1991 he was born.
That's what's not Taurus. Taurus is like March, April time, I think.
Leo is now, and I can't remember what's after Leo.
Adam,
listen, we've got five Taurians. Thank you, Womble World, for this information. Five Taurians, three Librans, two Leos, two Scorpios, two Capricorns. I have a feeling that I'm not entirely sure when Capricorn is, but he might add to that list.
Can I draw this back to a slightly more football focus?
No,
I feel you'll find that this is about as in depth as it gets, Mark.
Matt, do we have any Sagittarius?
Do we have any
Sagittarius?
Sagittarians. We've got one Sagittarian in the side.
Who's the Sagittarian?
I don't know who the Sagittarian is, but we've got one.
Right. Are we saying we need more Sagittarians?
Well, we need. We haven't got any Aries, and we haven't got any Cancer, so we need both of those.
Sagittarius, which is of course your Dan, is
yeah, Dom. We've only voiced Dan's name four times. We only signed him this afternoon.
Their primary strength is optimism.
There. Well, that sounds like a great kind of player to sign.
There you are. You see, so it's good that we can add that into the squad. But
he's bold.
Yeah,
bold, jovial disposition.
Yeah,
easy to feel happy, enthusiastic, and to see the bright side of life.
Excellent.
We lost 3-0 against 10 men. That's probably a really good thing, isn't it?
So there you are, chaps. If you want to do it, have a Google. Go to wombleworld.co.uk and check out their Zodiac scouting, because it is hilarious and yet almost bizarrely informative about giving the sort of like overall what we're missing in terms of characters in the squad.
Can I ask Adam a question that will test his memory?
Short tempers, though, Sagittarians.
Yeah.
Adam shakes his head. So, in terms of what can we do? Well, frankly, let's go back to the team that got promoted. And we know that obviously teams move on and individuals move on. But what was the spine of that team that we had that got us promoted to the playoffs?
You're asking Adam.
I'm asking Adam, and Adam.
Listen, we all look at times in the podcast to bring Adam in, and I think you've got to work. You've got to work at a particular moment. But you're asking Adam to name the spine of the team that got us promoted.
Fair enough. I think this is a ridiculous matter. You're right. This might not be Adam's strength, but I'm going to sit back and just see if he can do it.
I'm not going to be able to do it, am I? Okay, Bugle was definitely in there.
I'm at the top, I'm at the bottom, but yeah, that's fine. Bugle at the top with Stevens. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. Bugle didn't play in the playoff final, but never mind. Yeah.
It's fine. He was still in the spine. Who was that?
Goodman.
We had some quite experienced defenders, Goodman. But I can't remember their names.
Goodman.
The goalie, Goodman.
Yeah, okay, you got both ends. Goodman at one end. Stevens and Beagle at the other end. Okay, in the middle.
Come on, Adam, we've been talking about one. And another one would be like...
Hippolyte.
Another one who might have had...
Yeah, Hippolyte Reeves. We did ask this before. Hippolyte Reeves, so they're cool.
Who has got a problem with the length of his shorts?
Joe Lewis.
And...
Yeah, we had quite a lot of experienced players.
Who was Lewis's partner?
Don't know.
Ryan Johnson, never mind.
Okay. Oh, Johnson, yeah, of course. So yeah, okay.
Point,
so, yeah.
The point of my comment, I don't think that our issues, fundamental issues overall in the team, lay on whether or not we have Goodman back on another loan, because he's been on other loans in other clubs and hasn't done so well. And obviously, we know that Bugle's effectiveness, unfortunately, diminished and he's moved on. And Stevens is injured. So Stevens coming back will be a new signing, but we can't factor that in for another month or so. However, what you've lost there is you've lost the pace, and that I think is the crucial bit of Lewis, and obviously the younger legs of Reeves. So,
I think one thing, Mark, you missed out on, really, is really important with that particular team, is Nerville.
Yeah, well, there you go, pace.
Yeah,
basically on Saturday, Oggs.
Yeah, we've got no one that runs anyone.
Absolutely hammered for the red card by a guy jumping in with 2 feet. And as soon as he went down, the Huddersfield fans were singing you soft southern shite Oggs, which was predictable but rather harsh. Oggs basically was defending on his own, really, because unfortunately so far Sweeney, not only has he not played 90 minutes, but Sweeney and Johnson together looked like they could be appropriate for a Disney Cunard cruise, because that's the speed of the turning circle that they have right now. And so surely any defender, someone talked about Ben Hennigan, for example, as a free agent. Well, again, solid, dependable in the air, but turning circle of a fleet of supermarket trolleys. So it's not big or clever, frankly. That's the issue, that we need the pace. Dom, I don't necessarily know at 34 is really going to give us the pace there. Sessegnon, I think, would, but Tilly does not look fit yet, for example.
No, it was super slow. I mean, that's the thing. It was super slow. I mean, I got a message from my brother saying, what happened? And I was like, we didn't play. Like, we literally didn't play. And everyone looked very sluggish, I have to admit. So
we were doing well last season. We were high press.
That was it. And there was energy in the team.
There was not energy in the team. They're definitely at Newport. We look very lackluster. And that's got to be a concern. There's no, you know, who's the rallying cry? Who's the person that's going to chase down every ball? Who's that kind of figure that Wimbledon always used to have in the centre of the park from, you know, way back to Mark's, you know, hero Galliers and onwards? You know, we've always had that kind of a player.
Nice, smart guy. So it's a beautiful picture out. Very nice. Yeah. It is too, showing the different kits.
This is my little birthday list. Can any of you guess who the players are without being able to see? Because the names are written really, really small.
No. Are these heroes? No, I can see Dave Besson.
So, from the top left, Alan Cork, Dickie Guy, Dave Besson.
Vinny.
Laurie Sanchez.
Sanchez. You have to lift up. Can't see any lower than that.
No, it's actually Dennis Wise, sorry. Dennis Wise. Roy Law, I believe. Or possibly Eddie Reynolds. No, Eddie Reynolds. Niall's mate.
Robbie Earl.
This guy's not going to like this one. The only one that's in Maxi Muscle kit.
Michael Hughes.
Close. Alan Kimball.
What the fuck have you got Kimball in there for?
Why have you got a Maxi Muscle shirt on there?
No idea. I didn't do this, all right?
Right, mate. You've got to send it back.
Kevin Cooper.
No. You just send it back now.
Roy Law, Warren Barton.
I've got one of those Maxi Muscle shirts somewhere.
Warren Barton's a bit of a controversial one.
Indeed. Danny Kebwell, Lyle Taylor. Hang on, down now. Ian Cook, John Main, Marcus Gale, Neil Ardley in the 92-93 with our sponsor. Some bloke called Fashionu. Barry Fuller, Vinny, and Kenny Cunningham, which is quite topical.
Yeah, Cunningham. Yeah, there was an interesting thing on the Beeb, Cunningham talking about how every, and I think, because I know that we are the only, like I say, we're the only pro fan-owned podcast out there. And Kenny said every time we step onto the pitch, it's a victory. I like that as a thought, to be honest with you. And I think that's how we got to take it.
Are you ignoring the bit where he said that he thought Dublin Dons was a great idea?
I'm ignoring that completely. Because I think there are arguments for that. I think moving us there is the wrong thing. If you want to do something, you have to go somewhere else, but don't start messing with us.
Yeah, caveat that quickly. There are arguments for having a professional football club in Dublin.
Yeah.
Not an English professional football club in Dublin.
No, exactly. So, you know,
you could say the idea, considering the Premier League is about a million miles away from us, and I don't really give a toss about it, by and large. You know, if they wanted to extend their franchise and not have any promotion and relegation, which is probably ultimately what they'd like to do, then well, they can do whatever they want.
I think the one beautiful thing is that there's still the dream, isn't there? How unrealistic. That pyramid thing needs to be looked at.
I think it's great the fact that we were the only fan, like pro fan owned podcast, and now we're basically saying we no longer want the Premier League. That's going to go down really well with everyone listening.
Niall Cooper said that.
All I'm saying is the Premier League could do with a bit of a restructure and a bit of a reorganisation, and it just needs a little bit tweaking.
Yeah, I think the beauty of the thing is the pyramid. I think it's beautiful and it's a dream. I mean, and for us, we did that dream. You've got to remember that. We were very lucky as our same old Wombles. We were incredibly lucky to have that journey from the early 80s into the and to where we are now. It's been an amazing journey to have gone through it. We went from the, you know, non-league up to the first division. We won the FA Cup. You know, we've done all of that. It's been brilliant for us.
One thing I should mention is, because obviously I'm the person who throws in a bit of politics, is it may have passed people by that the Co-op Party have just put a policy backing and looking at how they support and encourage and grow fan-owned clubs. Now, the Co-op Party, for those who don't know, are the sister party of the Labour Party. So most of the MPs in the North are actually Labour and Co-op Party MPs. They're not Labour MPs, they're Labour and Co-op Party MPs. Andy Bowen Burnham is a Co-op MP, along with a lot of that. Their policy is to actually grow and support and encourage fan-owned clubs. So there, as a policy, there is an opportunity to do more there. So that's something I'm actually having another conversation with on Friday to be looking at about what that could mean and what that might, how that might develop. So there is something different that could potentially happen then. I think that's where the political wind in government is going.
And there you are. There you are, people.
Starmer was an Arsenal fan who was very, very much in bed with the Premier League. Burnham is not that person. So there is an interesting change in that football dynamic.
Because he's an Everton fan and he knows they're never going to win the Premier League. So, well, I mean, which is, you know, which is great. But, and I think he still owes me
and the whole of Wimbledon for all the money that Everton obviously may allegedly have paid a certain goalkeeper in a certain game a long time ago, which we won't talk about.
He likes rugby league as well, which is always disturbing.
I was going to segue to the Fulham game from talking about the Premier League, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I think, no, listen, I like the structure of our football league, and I think most of us do. There is always an ambition to get up, and I think, you know, things have changed a lot, and you know, but my feeling is that if people don't like, you know, Sky moving matches willy-nilly, if they don't like VAR, if they feel like as a fan you're being treated by shit by those in charge, then, you know, if you get a voice in your club,
are you going to say
you can stand up and you can make a difference?
That's what you think about. Are you going to say then you can listen to the other podcasts?
No, I'm saying no. If because people usually don't want that. So that's what they complain about all the time. And we as a group can, you know, we can stand up for that. You know, and it was nice to get a mention on Facebook. We were name checked on Facebook. Which is always nice, always pleasant. Because there was someone said a comment and they said, if you're not careful, Samuel Wombles will slag you off. But the thing is, we don't slag off individual peoples. What I find quite interesting is when someone comes on and slags and says you're going to be the victim of something, then they go on to abuse everyone else who disagrees with them. I always find it's quite an interesting thing. Playing the victim card. So, you know, listen, if you want the best for your football fans, whatever it is, then, you know, we're part of a movement. That's what I'm saying, really. And also, if you want to have a conversation about selling up and that everyone wants to, every time we lose, everyone wants to have a conversation about selling up, then I think it's important that there is a candidate in the next Don's Trust elections. So those elections will be coming out soon in September, October, the next stage. So put your name forward and let's have a proper conversation about it. I think is a good thing. But it's very rarely anyone puts their name forward who is pro selling up. But you know, put a name forward, have a conversation.
I think that's a useful thing. Adam's going to get elected sooner or later, so he's got to stand.
Yeah.
So I've got to go pro selling out.
No. I think you can go completely the other way and just see what happens. See whether you're going like pro, like going 100% fan ownership. Mind you, say you went 50+1, didn't you?
But I did.
Yeah.
But every time I didn't get the reason I didn't get elected before was because I was too hard on, too far over. So you know, you have to go down the middle ground if you want to get elected at this point.
You've got to make Niall's never gonna get in there again. But you've got to be able to compromise. And I think you've got to be able to listen to people. And if there's a lot of people out there who genuinely think that the best option for our club is to sell up.
There isn't. This is the thing. There isn't a lot of them out there. There's a few noisy voices that appear on the internet occasionally. We know, because we talk to lots of people of varying groups and ages, and I'm confident we try our best, that the vast majority, we've seen so many surveys, etc., are totally fan ownership. And the thing is, you know, we've
the
got
people that are attracted to us as a unique USP.
Exactly.
Fan ownership. You know, how many
this
people
is the thing, we've got these investors.
We've been having this conversation. Yeah. You know, you lose people because you lose the magic of it. You lose why do we exist? Why are we any different? And it just gets me. Like, we're going to set up, right, one, if you buy, we lose control. You know, you lose control and you lose, like, the magic of it, and you just can end up with, like, shed loads of debt, and it just, it doesn't make any sense. You're more like, if we sell up, we're more likely to go bust.
Yeah. And the thing is, how many teams lost on Saturday? It wasn't just us. Football teams lose games. Yeah. That's the thing. There's a winner and there's a loser, and occasionally there's a draw, which is not that often anymore, right? It's like, we lost the game. We know we're going to struggle. It wouldn't matter how much money we got. You still have to get it, you know. It wouldn't matter how much money we currently had at this point, unless you did some weird Wrexham thing. But then, look at that. That's just not working out. So, like, come on.
Well, I think they're doing pretty well, to be honest with you, Wrexham.
But they're in a position now where they're having to spend £8 million on goalkeepers to not necessarily guarantee themselves anything.
Yeah.
And we don't know they are going to be losing loads of money.
Yeah.
So at this point, where Ryan Reynolds, the amount they put in hasn't been that much, because most of it's come through from really clever marketing. They've invested in the right ways, right? But at this level, to stay still, they are going to have to be putting in 20, 30 million a year. And Ryan Reynolds, for however much he may or may not be rich, he hasn't got that amount of money to lose every year.
So they've done well with getting all the different networks involved. Anyhow, let's move on. But do you know what? I feel like we're free to say this because, like I say, we're the only podcast that's saying it. So you've got a choice of others you can listen to if you want to talk about selling out. That's fine. The other thing that's come out, there was another interview that was interesting I saw, which was an interview with JJ about his ambitions as a manager. I don't know if any of you saw that.
I haven't seen the interview, but the funny thing is, I don't want to speak rude about Moose because I've never come across him. Moose is the nickname he uses. However, having said that, he seems on social media to think that he's the mate of absolutely every single fan or every single player. And his demonstration of that is the fact that he's waved at them as they walk off the pitch once, which seems a bit tenuous to me. Having said that, if he actually asks some genuine questions to Jackson, testing ones, searching ones, ones that actually require him to give something other than the bland answer, then fair play to him. Well done.
Yeah, and he did. I mean, it was quite interesting because JJ talked quite candidly about, you know, he's an ambitious manager. He wants to manage at the Premier League. That's what he was saying. And I think his thing is to, and he talked, JJ talked a little bit about the idea of investment coming into the club. So I think his hope would be to get us into the Championship. That's what he'd hope for. But then, you know, ultimately he wants to manage in the Premier League. And I think he points to the fact it's very difficult for an English manager to manage in the Premier League. You've almost got to do what Lampard has done, which is join a sort of like mid to top side in the Championship and get them promoted, and then hope you can hang on there, because, you know, it's going to be difficult because, you know, how many people are going to be calling for Frank Lampard to be sacked if they've only got 3 points by Christmas, or, you know, hopefully that isn't the case. But it's really difficult. But it was interesting that, you know, and I think he's in his last year contract with Wimbledon at the moment. I think his contract runs out next summer. So will he look to move on? And also, I think the other thing which is really difficult for him being the manager of Wimbledon is how he gets spotted by someone else, because what he's going to have to do is not just keep us up, he's going to have to exceed expectations. So we're going to have to finish mid-table or above for him to get noticed by another club to make a gamble on him, to be honest with you, I'd have thought. And if he leaves us, much like what's happened to Ardley and others, is where does he go next? Because there's loads of people who want to manage in the league. So where would he go next?
And what type of gamble do you take about managing somewhere far away from where you're based? So, for example, the former Crawley manager, who did a great job to bring franchise down, but the former Crawley manager then has ended up going to York. to replace the guy that got them into back in the Football League. And understandably, he's on the sticky wicket already because the guy that got them in the Football League was quite rightly quite popular. The guy lost his first game, and then the fans, and also apparently Radio York as well, were talking about, you know, you're getting sacked in the morning type stuff, which is quite sensibly the guy pointed out, the manager pointed out that this isn't stress, you know. He's had some very sad personal things happen in his life, which are very public knowledge. But equally, wherever he's based, I'm guessing he's either not based in York or he's not based in Crawley. So he's had to move luck, stock and barrel life-wise. And again, you know, Ardley, we know, is a manager and person who's from the Epsom, South West London area. And he moved obviously up to play, to be manager at Solihull Moors for a while. And how well did that necessarily work? So it's a tough one because every individual, whether they're manager or player or coach, whoever it may be, has got a family, has got a background, has got personal commitments that may not necessarily work, which is the other thing we don't necessarily consider about, you know, what players are we going to be able to sign? You know, I mean, we're talking about Nkeng, Nkeng going to QPR, Nkeng going to, what was the other club that we're in?
Forest.
Nottingham Forest. Moving from London to Nottingham as an 18, 19-year-old is the big deal.
Yeah, but I think it would be softened by the amount they pay him.
Of course, it still doesn't mean that you're in a hotel, you're in a flat, you're in an apartment, you've got nothing else
it is difficult about where you get players. I know it is really difficult. But it's interesting that he's, you know, I like the fact that he's got that ambition. He's going to, but I think being a Wimbledon manager, it gives you a great opportunity, but it is precarious. And at some point this season, people will be calling for his head.
What do we make of him talking about the investment stuff?
Well, it was very sort of like loosely talked about that, you know, talking about potential money coming in. It does feel to me, and I saw it that one of the other podcasts mentioned this, that there'll be, you know, short-term pain, but there looks like there might be some news happening in September. So I'm interested. You know, it might be that that's the way that we're going to hear something in September, which is going to be interesting.
And whatever the information is you would want, and we're obviously open as we have been before, as hopefully all the other podcasts would be, for anyone from the Don't Trust board to come back on, talk about what the issues are, talk about what the suggestions are, and what's going to get put in front of the fans. The more information that any fan of any persuasion, whether they listen to a podcast or not, can get in advance of the votes, because again, it'll have to be a two-step vote as it was previously, the better overall.
Yep, exactly.
Who's got loyalty points in the away fans thing? How many you got?
Oh, not many. I can't remember. 200 or something? Is that
200?
Yeah, you've not got 200, mate.
If he's got 200, it's a lot more than everyone else.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you must have the most, Mark. Let me look it up.
I got 54.
54. Okay, Mr. Matt Cooper.
Gosh, I'm trying to work out if I got. Let me see.
Did you get an email?
Checking it now. I did get an email. Yeah.
So this is about the away.
48. I got 48.
Ayrshire Wimbledon away loyalty scheme designed to recognise and reward for supporters who follow the Dons home and away. 48 I've for got, Adam.
Yep. What did you have, Noel?
54.
I don't know how this has worked out because I don't think I've been to any more than you. I've got 58.
Well, maybe you turned up at a few more home games or something. What can I say?
Yeah, it does, because you get points for the home games, you get points for a women game, you get points for all kinds of stuff.
Which, given that I went last season to Doncaster and, well, think about this now, a few other away games, all of which have slipped my memory. Reading, I got 67. So are you guys all in loyalty group two?
Yes. Yeah.
So what are you in? There already are two loyalty groups. I'm not sure, but you know.
What are you in? Are you in priority one?
No, I'm in two. I think you have to have like 80 plus or something to have priority.
I mean, one. I would like to know what situation is going to be that it's given to priority group one over priority group two. How many people have got are in priority group one?
Well, Bromley. No, I mean, you've got Bromley and Fulham coming up, obviously. And Fulham, I was just looking it up.
They're anyone could go to Fulham. We're getting 6,000 tickets.
Yeah, apparently they're giving us the whole of that end, which normally gets split between home and away fans. But I saw something the Ray Armfield, friend of the pod, posted on socials this morning, and he was saying that on that, it was talking about three different ends, that are available for Fulham fans, but they didn't mention the Putney end, which I believe is normally split between home and away fans. Let me just find the tweet.
So, yeah, I think...
I've seen that, Mark.
Okay, here we go.
I think we can see that.
He obviously tweets quite a lot because there's quite a few things I'm trying to find that he did today. Here we go. Fulham are selling home tickets for their Carabao Cup game. This was yesterday, posted actually, which reads like we'll potentially get the 6,320 capacity in the Putney end. And they're selling their home tickets for for 25 quid in the Riverside stand, which is their posh one, and 20 quid in the other two stands. So I suspect it'll be maximum 25 quid that we're going to have to pay. Please note, it says on this Fulham note, please note the Putney end will be allocated to away fans only. Therefore, there'll be no home tickets sold in the Putney end, which means, yeah, that's it.
How many do you think we'll take? We're not taking 6,000.
Not 6,300.
Well, we'll take three.
I thought 3,000.
Three or four. I mean, it's still school holiday time, but it's the last week of the school holidays. Obviously, the season hasn't gone great. We have got two home games in between. I did ask genuinely in the box office today, and I actually said, you know, in a polite way, how many times we've been asked to buy Fulham tickets. And the colleague there very, very politely smiled and said, you know, hundreds. And that was just today. But apparently the ticket information is going on sale in the next 24 hours.
Awesome.
Right, cool.
And I imagine it'll be like it has been, like the Huddersfield game I managed to book online. It came through Dontotix, no issues whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, I reckon maybe four tops.
Yeah, I'd have thought so. I mean, people will bring friends. People will bring people who are, you know.
Interesting. My daughter said she liked to go, and we were counting grounds when we're doing the trip to Huddersfield. You're bored, so you play word games and stuff in the car on the motorway. And one of them we were doing with how many grounds have we been to around the season, around the country, and we got to, I don't know, 60 odd. And Fulham was one of those, but it's a long while. I think I went to that Lewisburg Morto game where he dived when we were 1-0 up with about 2 minutes left, and he dived to get the penalty. Niall's nodding sagely.
I think I
remember that game because that was the one where our chance of playoffs disappeared that day.
Yeah. Anyhow, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be, you know, we've got to enjoy these things, haven't you? You've got to enjoy these times out. Hopefully we're going to start getting some form. Hopefully we're going to start getting some players, but it feels like when King goes, maybe that will move some things around. I think the Plough Lane bond is just under £500,000 at the moment. So we still need another £1,200,000. So Adam, if you can find that, that'd be great. The last thing to say is that it wasn't just our team kicked off a league season. It wasn't the men's team kicked off the league season. The women's team kicked off the league season, and they lost at home narrowly to Bournemouth. Now, bearing in mind, I think last season we played Bournemouth, we lost 5-0 and 5-1. We only lost 1-0. So it feels like we're going in the right direction there.
Yeah, and actually, just to add to that, I ran into somebody, had lunch in the hand-in-hand at Woodland Village today. And my brother, and I ran into a woman friend who was at the game, and he said they played, first of all, there were, I think he said, three or four maximum players in the whole squad involved, including the reserve goalkeeper who were involved last year. So it is a completely brand new team.
Yeah.
Including a bunch of players they only signed in the last week or so.
Yeah, from somewhere in our equivalent league in the north.
Two or three have come from Loughborough Lightning, yeah.
Loughborough Lightning, yeah.
But he said they played front foot football. They played very aggressive football. They scored two goals, which I think his quote was, if there'd been anything close to VAR, both goals would have been allowed.
The line was quite wrong
with their decisions, basically. We also had a goal disallowed at Huddersfield, which probably wouldn't have made any difference, but 2-0 down. We had a goal disallowed, which is a looping header by Johnson. It was disallowed for Marcus Brown interfering with the goalkeeper. Now, with the greatest respect, as Adam's shaking his head again, Marcus Brown in the air doesn't interfere with anyone except possibly his own ability to fall over.
Yeah.
So that was harsh. Didn't make any difference to the result, but it was harsh. But no, the women's team sounds like it's a positive step forward.
Yeah. No, it does. It does, which is, and that's a good thing. And I know, Mark, you've got something planned for us at some point, which I'm excited about.
Still working on that. Yeah. But yes.
But it's all.
We would like to obviously speak more about the women's team on the pod. We are happy to talk to more about the women's team at any particular opportunity.
And I know that Adam
wants to. We'll be happy to come on and talk about it as well.
And Adam, you've got a season ticket for the women's team, so you'll go sometimes and be able to report back. And obviously, we're going to go this season. But anyhow, it feels like that's moving in the right direction. Unlike the men's team, we need to get some stuff sorted there. But it's early days. We've played one game in the league. Let's see how we get on Saturday. Let's all get behind the team, whatever it is. And, you know, come on, you Dons. As we always say, and we're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we win.